Today in London. The bell ringers at St. Vitus Foster Lane practice on Monday night. There's a teaching session from 6 to 7. That's followed by an open ringing. Primitive recording, but you get the idea. Okay, today in London history. Guarantee you won't have heard of this one. Or heard of the Londoner who's the perp. His name is James Puckle. We catch our first glimpse of James Puckle on January 22, 1688. It's James's wedding day. His bride is one Mary Frances. They get married at St. Vitus Foster Lane. They're getting married there. That's what tipped the balance for me. That's what got James Puckle invited to this podcast. Permit me to explain. I'm painting a portrait of London. It'll never be finished. I'm adding to it all the time, every day. It's my life's work. It gets ever richer, has ever more depths to peer into and wonder at. Now, depending on which route I plump for, St. Vitus Foster Lane has a juicy cameo role on my Shakespeare's and Dickens's Old City walk. It's a magical old church. There are 20 things about it to point out and to love. Now there are 21. I'll never see St. Vitus Foster Lane again without thinking, so this is the church where James Puckle, the guy who invented the machine gun, got married. Knowing that delights me. It's another brushstroke for that part of my portrait of London. I like everything about it. Not the least of which is, it's completely wacky. Get to that in a minute. But first, family life for James Puckle. Mary Frances bore him at least 8 children. She died sometime between 1702 and 1714. Now you see Mary Frances, now you don't. Just tantalizing, fleeting glimpses. That's what we have to make do with. That 12-year hiatus. She maybe died as early as 1702, or as late as 1714. If it was toward the earlier date, well, she bore him at least 8 children in about 13 years, more or less permanently preggers. And then there's the business of the will. On February 21st, 1715, James Puckle got married a second time. A widow named Elizabeth Frowns. 4 months later, James Puckle draws up his will. He leaves 1 shilling each to each of his and Mary Frances's 4 surviving children. Their ages at the time were 13 to 25. The rest of his estate, James Puckle left to his second wife, Elizabeth. It's murky, that will. Something going on in there that was ugly. Of course, we note in passing, it would have been anything but in passing to James Puckle and their mother, Mary Frances. Anyway, we note in passing that 4 of their 8 children didn't make it out of childhood. But that telling, chilling detail in the will. My goodness. Leaving the surviving kids just 1 shilling each. How hurtful, how insulting, how cruel was that? Worse than leaving them nothing, really. It's the kind of detail a fine dramatist would latch on to and work back from, build a whole play around, presumably a tragedy, or a novelist. One thinks of the first sentence of Tolstoy's Anna Karenina, "Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way." It's 13 generations on now, but I, for one, can't help but wonder, are any of my fellow Londoners descended from that happy, hopeful young couple, James Puckle and Mary Frances? Well, happy and hopeful they will have been on their wedding day there at St. Vitus Foster Lane. But let's get to the machine gun. Here's the connection with today's date, March 31st. On March 31st, 1722, the London Journal reported a successful trial of the machine gun. It said one man had discharged it 63 times in 7 minutes. 9 rounds per minute. Sounds impressive for 1722, bearing in mind that experienced musketeers of that day and age were expected to fire off 3 rounds per minute. Wasn't a success, though. Very few of the Puckle guns were manufactured, some say as few as 2. And its critics said, Puckle's machine is dangerous only to its investors. Puckle had taken out a patent on the weapon 4 years previously. It was portable, it was breech-loading, it could be swiveled and elevated on a collapsible tripod. But here's the kicker. It could fire grenades, or either round or square bullets, according to whether the enemy was Christian or Turk. You heard right. They had square bullets back then. But they were quickly outlawed because of the horrific injuries they wrought, outlawed for use against fellow Christians. The infidel, Turks, were another matter. Perfectly all right to use square bullets on them. And that gets us to the raison d'etre of my London portrait. It's not just for fun, it's to try to understand the genus Brit, the race of people who live on this island. And surely, the key to everything, including the mentality of the genus Britisher, is that this is an island. Step back, take a big picture look at history. After the Renaissance, it was Portuguese and Spanish sailors who led the great explorations over the far horizons, while the English concentrated upon defending the coastline that had insulated them from the rest of Europe for centuries. All kinds of important stuff about national character can be discerned in that single brushstroke about square bullets being reserved for Turks. Think about the image that won the Brexit referendum. It was UKIP's Breaking Point poster, unveiled by Nigel Farage. It showed thousands of ethnic minority migrants crossing the Croatia-Slovenia border, the clear implication being they were coming here, stirred in with ingredients like the slogan, Take Back Control, as in Take Back Control of Our Borders, and front page stories headlined, 12 million Turks say they'll come to the UK, and you've got a toxic, potent brew that speaks irresistibly to the primordial instincts that are part and parcel of the islanders' mentality. And a very similar, equally powerful image from the 1979 election campaign turned up the flame even further. It showed a great long dole queue outside an employment office. Its three-word slogan was, Labor isn't working. The subliminal message was, of course, those migrants, those 12 million Turks, are coming for your jobs. Potent stuff, perfect fit. So yes, all of that's there, swirling about, when I turn the corner and St. Vitus Foster Lane comes into view. All of it, in a sense, concentrated in, or at least evoked by, those two single brushstrokes, Puckle's machine gun and that square bullet. But always, in this infinitely rich city, this infinitely rich culture, there's a counterbalancing view. Just round the corner from St. Vitus was St. Martin-le-Grand, and it's there that Sir Thomas More confronts anti-alien rioters in London. This is in an Elizabethan play called Sir Thomas More. It was written by Anthony Munday and Henry Chettle. The one golden moment in the play is that moment when More confronts the rioters. We know that scene was revised. The manuscript of the revision has survived. It's in the British Library. We believe that the revision was the work of William Shakespeare, that those lines on that manuscript were set down by William Shakespeare's hand. Scholars say the handwriting, spellings, stylistic matters all point to Shakespeare being the author. But more than anything else, it's the caliber and power and humanity of the speech that's got Shakespeare written all over it. The sentiments expressed, and the way they're expressed, it's Shakespeare at his best, and the English at their best. And that, too, is another brushstroke in this part of my portrait of London. We're not going to end this podcast with square bullets for aliens. We're going to end it with a very great Englishman, two very great Englishmen, William Shakespeare and Sir Thomas More, the English at their finest, rebuking people who hate foreigners, making a wonderfully compassionate statement on behalf of refugees, on behalf of our shared humanity. Here's the speech. Grant them removed, and grant that this your noise hath chid down all the majesty of England. Imagine that you see the wretched strangers, their babies at their backs, and their poor luggage, plodding to the ports and coasts for transportation, and that you sit as kings in your desires, authority quite silent by your brawl, and you in ruff of your opinions clothed. What had you got? I'll tell you. You had taught how insolence and strong hand should prevail, how order should be quelled, and by this pattern, not one of you should live an aged man. For other ruffians, as their fancies wrought, with self-same hand, self-reasons, and self-right, would shark on you, and men like ravenous fishes would feed on one another. Good night from London. See you tomorrow.